Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
I'm Ella Jean Ehrlich, Tamara Glennie's granddaughter, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, and introduced this week by Ella Ehrlich, granddaughter of Kickstarter backer Tamara Glennie. I think with all due respect and gratitude towards everyone else that has submitted their openings, and there are plenty more to come before the end of the year, I think that's our favourite so far,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we may as well call off the race right now.
Hang on, there was a race?
Well, there is now. She's won it.
There's the race to London, there's the race to Singapore, the race to Milan, and the race to Kickstarter, backer, intro, glory.
Well, I want Ella Ehrlich to have her own show based on that alone.
She is great. And thank you to both Ella and her grandmother, Tamara, for their support and input into this podcast. What a lovely way to start. We are once again in Waterloo Station. I've been waiting 4 years for David Law whilst he was finishing up his commentary of
time flies, doesn't it?
The Beijing final. Yes, I've seen so many people come and go. I'm on my third cup of tea. I've seen a lot of pigeons come and go. There was a lovely little dog sat next to me that I was considering recording the podcast with. If he didn't arrive in time, he would have been great. He had plenty to say about things.
Okay.
He saw me, in fact, watching the Garcia-Halep match with David Law commentary on my phone. He was very interested in that. So maybe just loved the commentary of David Law and Nigel Sears.
Probably.
So, yes, you've come straight from that. I've been commentating for ATP Radio on the Tokyo final, which was won by Goffin. You've just seen Caroline Garcia, both back-to-back titleists, Goffin and Garcia, and we are currently, I should disclaimer this, we are recording during the Beijing men's final between Rafael Nadal and Nick Kyrgios. And how many minutes have gone and how many games have passed?
We're 35 minutes in and it's 3-2 first set on serve Nadal. So I don't know what they've been getting on with, but there's already been, I believe, a code violation for Nick Kyrgios. So, you know, the usual. He's been playing some spectacular stuff. Nadal's, looks like a cracking match.
We're going to try, or I'm certainly going to try and navigate us away from saying too much decisively about this match during recording, because the risk of us looking silly is so, so high, given that the result will be known by the time anybody hears this.
Why didn't you try and navigate us away from that for the last 357 episodes?
This is quite good, actually, recording during a match, so that we can get ourselves out of jail with having to talk about whether or not we predicted the result. I know in the intro, in the build-up on Sky, I didn't catch all of it, because I was coming from commentating myself, but Miles McLagan was picking Nadal. I mean, he's the world number one. I guess you have to pick Nadal, given that. But I was speaking to Amy Cavaday, and she said, look, the fact about Nick Kyrgios, the enigmatic fact about Nick Kyrgios, is that his very best probably beats anyone. And it's weird thinking of a match between a world number one and a non-top 10 player to think that the non-top 10 player could potentially be the favourite. And I'm not saying he is, but a lot of people think he is.
Yeah, I would still hold the caveat that I think I've seen his best twice this year in which he hasn't won, and both of them were against Roger Federer.
Ooh, yeah.
The Laver Cup decider, and also that Miami match. that having been said, I do feel that Kyrgios could have won either if he'd have just held it together at the vital moment. So I think that they could have gone either way. That what I'm saying to you is I think that those are the two best players in the world at their best.
I'm getting updates from my brother via WhatsApp because we do have the match on David Law's phone. We've got so many devices out at the moment. We look like we're sort of setting up a sort of car boot sale type gadget sell-off in Waterloo Station. We have two phones, an iRig, which is a device we use to record the podcast, two iPads and a laptop. We're so modern and we're strewn with coffee cups. We're those annoying people with gadgets in coffee shops.
Is that why everybody's
staring
at us?
We are them. So we have the match on, but of course we don't have commentary and we can't quite hear what's going on. But my brother informs me that Kyrgios is very much turning the airwaves blue from China.
Oh dear.
So that's most likely what that code violation was for. He's now serving at 2-3 and 15 all. I'll stop giving score updates, shall I? Because everyone will know what's happened.
Yeah, probably best.
So, should we talk about what has happened?
Yes. Well, Caroline Garcia has happened is all we can say for absolutely certain over the last couple of weeks. Let's deal with that before we get on to Simona Halep World Number One, which is a wonderful story in its own right. But Garcia's achievement these past 2 weeks has been staggering to me. Nobody has ever done that before to win Wuhan and Beijing back-to-back. I know Wuhan hasn't been going on that many years, but still, you know, arguably that is an even greater achievement than winning Indian Wells and Miami back-to-back, because there is no 1.5-week-long tournament. They are a week long. There is no gap in between, really, and she had to come in. You know, Beijing had started before Wuhan had ended. That's what it was like for her. She won on the Saturday. She flew in. She got a bye in the first round, but then she played a really tough up-and-coming player in Elise Mertens in the first round, overcame her. She played 3 hours and 21 minutes to beat Alina Svitolina.
What a match it was,
who was
as well.
Fresh.
What a match.
I mean, look, some
such
of that...
Such a shame that it was played, so, you know, there were no crowd there.
Yeah.
Svitolina one of the matches of the year.
Will feel like she blew it, I think, because she was a breakup two or three times in that final set. She had a match point. That having been said, Garcia did not blink once over the last
couple of weeks. Where's this grit come from? I know we're repeating what we said last year, but where has gritty Garcia come from? Because we've known how good she is for plenty of time. We haven't known that she's this gritty.
No.
She's added her name to the list of players that have won a title this year from match point down.
No, it's very exciting to see what Caroline Garcia has done this last couple of weeks, because she is the full package when she plays like this. We've always known about her talent, but there's always been a big question mark over whether this is a player who could transfer great junior ability, great sort of potential into title winning form at the very highest level. Now, okay, you could say, well, she hasn't done it at a slam yet. No, she hasn't. But if she plays like this at slams, I'm telling you, she will.
Yeah, a lot of people
She beat Simona Halep in the final today. Goodness me.
And how. And that game
Petra
in the
Kvitova.
Second set where she saved 9 break points.
Yeah.
Goodness me. Yeah, I mean, she's blown me away. I didn't think, as I said, I didn't think this level of grit was in her. And I think, and this isn't a theory that I've just come up with on my own. I know that Mary Pierce and Marion Bartley, I haven't spoken to them since this incredible run of form, but it was something we talked about a lot in relation to Garcia and Mladenovic at the US Open. But I think the grit has likely, or at least in part, arisen from this feud with Kristina Mladenovic. And I get the impression it's not really an exaggeration to call it a feud. You know, since they split as doubles partners, I do believe it's been pretty ugly between the two of them. They said a couple of things publicly, haven't they? But I mean, I certainly get the impression it's not good. There's been this huge tussle between the two of them to be the French number one, to get into the top 10. Garcia is now there. She's very firmly the French number one, because Mladenovic has dropped off the edge of the cliff. Earlier in the year, it looked like it was Mladenovic that was surging away. But I think it could be that bit of sort of unpleasantness which has given her this steal.
Yeah, I think that could well be the case. I mean, I think, first of all, the fact that Garcia went on her own route and decided to end that partnership. That was quite brave in its own right, because she was a Grand Slam winning doubles player with Kristina Mladenovic. Now, a lot of people in French tennis didn't like that decision at all, didn't like the way that Garcia made that decision. I think by a text message is what I heard. I could understand that if it's true.
That was the element of it that went public, I think. The dislike of the fact that it was over text message.
Yeah, so all of that blew up. The other thing that did happen as well is that the rest of the French players seemed to side with Mladenovic, and really Garcia became an outcast. She hasn't played doubles at all anywhere since March now. But look at her results in the singles. You can't argue with that decision based on that ultimately selfish decision. In synchronicity, a number of the French players tweeted LOL, laugh out loud, at her expense. I can't remember what it was in relation to.
Something to do with Fed Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it did have, maybe this isn't too strong a word, it had a slight feel of bullying about it to me. And as a result of that, certainly people ganging up on her a little bit. And, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, fair play, Caroline Garcia. She stuck to her guns, gone her own way, and now look what's happened. So, well done to her.
Well done. Something else that's happened to her is she's drawn Maria Sharapova in the opening round in Hong Kong.
In Tianjin. I'm not sure she'll even play that now. The fact is, the way the standings are, she has now overtaken Johanna Konta. Pretty extraordinary series of points. She's made up.
Jo Konta would have been looking over her shoulder at Sloane Stephens and at Coco Vandeweghe, I would have thought, for the most likely threats to her place in Singapore. She wouldn't have been looking at Caroline Garcia. Well, I mean, she would have been this week, but up until 2 weeks ago, I don't think Caroline Garcia would have been somebody she'd have been remotely worried about.
No.
We got the word quite early on this week, I think Monday or Tuesday, certainly shortly after recording the last podcast, which was when Konta's early loss in Beijing was fresh. We got the word that she was pulling out of Hong Kong this week. We don't yet know whether she's planning to play Moscow. If she doesn't play Moscow, she has zero chance of qualifying for Singapore. But even if she plays Moscow, I believe, David, you think the state of affairs is that she'll have to at least make the final?
Yeah, she'd have to. As things stand, she'd have to make the final. Now Garcia has a choice to make. Does she play Tianjin and try to get more points on the board? It's a lower level tournament. The maximum you could get from it is about 280 points, even for winning the title there. And as you say, she's drawn Maria Sharapova in the first round. I mean, that's a rough draw. As things stand, Garcia would need a wild card to get into Moscow. There's no guarantee that she would actually receive a wild card. But even as things stand, Konta, who has no form at all right now, she's lost five matches in a row.
She's got Catherine Whittaker-esque form at the moment. Sorry, Joe, that's the worst thing I could possibly say. Yeah,
well,
sorry.
I did see the video of your forehand, and although I complimented it, okay, let's leave that there. She would have to get to the final to overhaul Garcia. If Garcia does nothing else, I think that's unlikely.
Would she have been watching it this week?
I don't know.
Look, we know.
It'd be torture, wouldn't it?
Know that she, you know, we don't want to fill in too many blanks here without being on firm ground. But we know she's the sort of character, very understandably so. I think I'd probably be the same. But the sort of character that will be stressed out about this situation, the pressure of this situation, how much she wants to qualify for Singapore.
Well, and who wouldn't be? Exactly. 2 years in a row this has happened.
Exactly. I mean, what happened last year? At the time, I thought she dealt with it brilliantly. And because she dealt with it so well, I think maybe I underestimated the impact of that on her, having to be in all those draw photos and then stick around and watch Kuznetsova sail in and take her place. That must have been pretty awful to have to hang around on the sidelines.
But I think at least it was new, and she could think, well, you know,
well,
I've had a great year. This year, she must, I mean, look.
She must feel like she should be there.
I certainly think, you know, we all thought she was there. I could not see this coming for a second.
Nor could I. But will she be watching it all, or will it all be a bit too torturous? I mean, what...
I wouldn't watch it. I, to be honest with you, I think I would... I hope she hasn't been. I'd be surprised if she has. I'm sure somebody's just let her know. But anyway, you know, the fact is she may well be going as an alternate again, which also would be
Do you think
quite
she
difficult.
Would, or do you think she'd prepare for Zhuhai?
I don't know.
Because it's actually really tough.
I mean, look,
it's really tough going as an alternate.
You often get
because Zhuhai, which I think is a fantastic concept for an event, actually, and should get more attention than it does. It's the sort of second-tier finals.
Held at the wrong time, though, isn't it?
Held at the wrong time, agreed. But actually, it's a real disadvantage going to Singapore as an alternate in terms of Zhuhai.
Yeah, I can't believe anybody really is that bothered about
what
that.
What if there were... Yeah, I mean... Yeah, and I also hear rumours completely unsubstantiated, but... Given age and circumstance and the fact that it's happened before, I do hear rumours that there are question marks over Venus Williams' participation in
really?
Singapore.
Well, she's in Hong
Kong. Fully rumour stage. So, but if you're Joe Konta
like
hearing those rumours, it might make you more incentivised to go as an alternate.
I think you go if you make it as an alternate, and there's plenty in it for you. You get paid. You get to have a pretty easy week by... normal standards.
Is it an easy week, though?
Yeah,
sitting
of course
there,
it is. Living the
seeing
life of
what
Riley.
You could have won. Well, but would Joe Konta be living the life of Riley? No, she wouldn't.
Well, there are worse things that you could be doing, aren't there? Let's be honest. 6-2
maybe not,
first set
maybe
Nadal.
Not if you're wow. Joe Konta. Hang on a second. 4 minutes ago or something, it was 2-2.
Yeah, well, it's not anymore. 6-2 Nadal.
Goodness
so,
me.
I think she would go because quite often you do find players pulling up lame and unable to play, so Konta would get in. Should we talk about Simona Halep, the new world number one?
Yeah, you commentated her being awarded that big bouquet of roses in the shape of... Were they roses? Sunny red
yes.
flowers in the shape of the number one. And she got really emotional. I thought it was a really nice moment. I wasn't expecting it to be that nice. Sometimes those moments are a little bit awkward and underwhelming for whatever reason. And it felt just right.
Well, if you consider three times previously this year, she'd been one match away from being world number one. And in all of those matches, she won the first set. And she had match points. And she had chances. And it was just pretty devastating for her that she didn't make it. You know, she did a great interview with Courtney at the WTA yesterday after it. And said that she doesn't have to feel ashamed anymore. And I thought that's a real insight into how much this means to her. It's her life is, I'd say it'll be complete, her career will be complete when she finally wins a slam, because that's another debating point, isn't it? You know, there's I think seven players now on the WTA side now that have reached world number one without winning a slam. But, you know, I watched back her speech having lost the French Open final this year, and it, you know, It's 6 months on, and it still brings a tear to the eye,
yeah.
really, seeing
and
how
was,
flawed she was.
And there was in light of that, there was a particularly lovely moment at the net between Elena Ostapenko and Simona Halep. It was Ostapenko that Halep beat to clinch
yes.
that world number one spot. And it was a real moment of genuine warmth from someone who, I mean, I like this about her, but someone in Ostapenko who isn't necessarily always known for her warmth in defeat.
Well, what Ostapenko does is give it to you straight.
Yeah.
She doesn't make it up. So you know that those feelings of warmth are genuine, I think.
And there were a heck of a lot of them on Twitter and so on as well other players.
It does yeah. appear that this is a player, Simona Halep, that everybody likes, that everybody feels warm towards, because she's the genuine article. There's no acting with her. She says it how she feels it. It was pretty raw a few times this year for her, and when she won, it all just came out how much this moment meant to her, because she described it in that interview as the hardest year of her career, but the best year of her career, because let's not forget Darren Cahill, as her coach, dumped her after the Miami situation with Johanna Konta, because and Halep holds her hands up, says, you know, I've had to have a psychologist to help me with this, to realise that I'm not that bad. You know, I need to be nicer to myself. I need to stop giving myself such a hard time because I don't deserve it. And effectively, she was just being hard on herself every time it went wrong. She turned into a little kid when things would go against her. And she's she's stopped doing that now. So, or at least she's handling these situations way, way better. I mean, that's a tough player for her to play, Ostapenko, and she handled it so well. And I mean, the debate.
She handled today's final with Garcia really well. It's just Garcia was great. I mean, you mentioned in commentary, look, I know she went on to lose the set and the match, but after that game, when she had the 9 break points, she held to love in the next one.
Yeah.
I don't think she necessarily would have done that six months ago or a year ago.
No, I agree with you. She'd have started saying, the world's against me, really. And it was noticeable, Andre Pavel, who's her travelling coach this week, did not come onto the court once this week. Quite interesting that. She relied on herself, but I do feel, and she kind of admitted it afterwards, that the sheer emotion of yesterday would have been draining for her today. That having been said, look, you know, Garcia, she's had so many of these moments. She held it together. That's why Garcia feels like a champion in waiting for the future as well.
When did you learn French, David? You were translating the chats between Garcia and her dad.
Was I doing a good job?
I was about to text you. I was watching it and I was about to text
you
a translation.
I was guessing.
Because there it was, you were saying.
I did.
Before I knew it, there was David Law telling me what was...
Thankfully, producer Rupert in my ear was giving me a few tips. I mean, I did actually learn immersive French in a two-week stint when I worked at the ATP and lived in the south of France. Two weeks
is definitely enough to learn a second language.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with
me is,
and most British people, I've got room for sort of my own language and then a bit of another one.
You speak a bit of Croatian.
Well, then when I learnt Croatian, the bit of French that I knew was replaced by the bit of Croatian.
It's because that space in your brain is occupied by Brummy.
Yes, well, that's true.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
We should probably talk about Dan Evans because the ITF judgment in his anti-doping case has come through. This week, I will read out some excerpts of it. Essentially, the bottom line is he has received a one-year backdated ban. He's already served around about 6 months of it, so he will be eligible to play from April of 2018. He admitted his anti-doping rule violation, did that at the press conference that we saw in June, and subsequently in a letter to the ITF on the 26th of June provided the following explanation, which was that out of competition he ingested a small amount of cocaine. He then put the leftover cocaine first in his pocket and then in the pocket of his wash bag before discarding it the next day. In the same pocket of the wash bag, he stored tablets of permitted medication. He took those tablets daily from April 20th to 24th, the date on which he provided the sample that later tested positive. And his expert explained that the presence of a very small amount of cocaine in that sample means the ingestion must have taken place no more than 24 hours prior to the provision, which means the legal pills he took likely came into contact with the small amount of cocaine in his wash bag, and that's how he ingested it the way he did at the time when he was providing... Well, that's why it was present in his body at the time of taking, of giving the sample. The ITF accepted that defence in so much as... Now, when I say defences are accepted, the burden of proof is on the ITF to prove that it didn't happen that way. It's innocent till proven guilty. Now, you can make of that... People will have their views on that, whether that ought to be the case, whether the balance in terms of burden of proof is in the right place. But essentially, what the acceptance of that defence means, and the same applies in Sara Rani and a number of other cases, is that they can't prove that it didn't happen that way. Therefore, they accept that defence, and he has a one-year ban when it could very well have been a two-year ban. When we talked about it back in June, I think we were thinking in terms of a two-year ban, David. So I've got my emotional reaction to it, which is I'm glad for him because I like him, and perhaps irrationally I believe that he wasn't trying to break the rules, he wasn't trying to gain an advantage. And whether or not that should be factored in, again, people will have their views. For me, that is a factor in my opinion of the whole thing. I think he's been a bit lucky, but I'm glad he's been a bit lucky. What's your view? Solihull correspondent David Law.
Look, I don't want that element of it to colour my view at all. Although, I mean, I do know Dan a bit.
He doesn't support West Brom, though, so
no, well,
he's not.
That's right.
He can't be that biased.
I say double the sentence. my view, my immediate reaction was, crikey, that's quite lenient. That's what it. What my immediate response was upon hearing that it was 1 year, because I thought it would be 2 years and then he would probably have to go through a process of reduction by a CAS, or maybe that they might have thought 18 months and then perhaps reduced it to 15 or something like that. That having been said, I don't think he was trying to get an advantage at all. I've never thought that for that particular substance. I know that some people would argue that it has some performance-enhancing properties to it. I don't think there was any intention to do that myself. That was my view from the outset. I should also say, having read an article by Mike Dixon in the Daily Mail the following day, in which he said he understood that the reason or the circumstances by which Evans came to be taking cocaine in the first place was that he was at a wake for a friend's mother's funeral, who'd passed away suddenly and recently in April, and that tallies with what my understanding is as well. Now, I'm always wary of factoring in those sort of circumstances, because should that come into play or not, you know, I just think that if that is the case, and Mike's right, and I believe he is right, then that should be at least known by people, because I don't think that this was just not giving a toss about your career and going out there and having a good time necessarily. I think there was more to it than that. That having been said, it's in his system. I'm just surprised, really, that the fact that it's in his system hasn't led to a greater sanction. I'm just surprised.
Question for you, and possibly a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer it. We can let it hang in the air as a sort of thought point, if you like, and nothing specifically relating to Dan Evans. But you said at the start there that your initial reaction was, crikey, that's lenient. when was the last anti-doping sentence verdict that wasn't your reaction to?
Well, that's a good question. I thought you were going to say, when was the last time I thought that? And it was Sorani.
Well, the last one.
Yeah. I can't think of too many. But then also, what's tended to happen more is that it has gone to appeal. Yeah. This did not go to an independent hearing, for starters. It certainly didn't go to CAS, which... And I, from reading the various accounts of Simon Briggs and Mike Dixon and people like that, the feeling is that they wanted and they were able to achieve a kind of amicable solution here in terms of the sanction, i.e. almost a bargaining situation where he didn't contest their sanction and their decision, and they didn't have to go down the full route of...
It's almost
of
like a plea
well.
Bargain, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the American legal system.
So, yeah, I think that they...
I mean,
have,
it is a plea bargain, kind of.
They have settled on that as a result, and I suspect that is quite a factor in where they've ended up at. Like I say, it's less than I thought it would be. For him, on a personal level, I'm pleased, because I think that he has a far greater chance of making a return to his career, because, you know,
where do you think
it's backdated till April now?
What's the first event he's eligible for?
Well, it's something in April, but the fact is that he won't be eligible for anything to the top level.
No, so will he get wild cards into British events?
I've no idea. I mean, that would be a decision that I guess
and will
Leon
he play
Smith,
on the clay?
Et cetera, would have to take.
Will he make his comeback on clay?
Well, I suspect that if you go down the rankings of tournaments available right to the bottom, you don't have to play on clay. You can find plenty of hard court tournaments in April and May, etc. And then there's grass court tournaments in which you can enter and maybe enter qualies of challenges when you've got enough ranking points and etc.
I mean, he knows the grind of the Challenger Tour, doesn't he?
This guy has got from 722 in the world to the top 100 inside a year. Now, that's not to say he'll go and do the same again immediately, but he knows he can. So, look, he's starting from nothing, really, again. And let's see. Like, I've said, I'm no fan of people getting wild cards when they fail tests, personally, because I don't think it sends out the greatest message in the world. You just have to see what they decide. Their decision will come through.
Yeah, I mean, if you've learned anything in the last year, it's that there is no sort of uniform sort of common denominator attitude towards that, is that everybody has a different position,
and I could understand
and everyone makes
on
their
one,
decision
really.
On the basis of different factors, commercial and otherwise. So
the fact that it isn't performance enhancing, I do think is significant, or at least that's my view.
Anyway. I that's my feeling as well. My moral compass points to this being slightly different. That's just my gut feeling. I understand why the rules can't necessarily take account of that, but equally, I don't know, just it doesn't sit right if they don't. But anyway, score update, redundant score update. Nadal leads by a set and a break.
That doesn't read particularly well for Nick Kyrgios, 6-2-2 love. And I mean, haven't heard the commentary again, haven't heard what's been said, but can see the body language.
I can give you my brother's updates. He says Kyrgios playing big boy tennis but making lots of errors. Kyrgios broken and imploding a bit. Borderline tank from Kyrgios now. Two double faults to lose set.
Well, the thing is, yesterday when we watched him beat Alexander Zverev, that was the very best
of
Nick Kyrgios.
What a match.
Because Zverev didn't play badly. He did not play badly. And Kyrgios just had him for breakfast because he let it all flow. He was loving the occasion. He was showboating. He was peacocking around the corner court, hitting sabres, you know, attacking with
he
that.
Was.
He hit a forehand cross-court missile completely flat on the full run that just had Zverev standing there flat-footed looking at it.
He looked annoyed, didn't he, at the whole thing. Why are you turning it on against me?
What have I just seen? Look. Yeah, well, absolutely.
And as they rightly pointed out in commentary, you absolutely have to take that as a mark of respect because, you know, I refer back to my Guido Pella comment from Nick Kyrgios in Madrid last year. And there's definitely no way that he puts Zverev in the Guido Pellet category, nor does he put Nadal there. But it looks like, I mean, I just think Nadal is amazing. Where is this coming from? Physically, he's not wearing any strapping on his knees anymore. Like, he should be physically falling apart.
Well, just
and he's just
like
going from
Federer
strength to strength.
At the end of last year, he did effectively the same thing. He rebuilt himself.
He did, but Nadal is a different physical specimen with a completely different style of game. And I didn't think physically he had it in him to do it this stage of a full long season on hard courts anymore. And he's blowing me away.
Well, I mean, I didn't think he did either. But he has always been a more incremental player than Roger Federer. And throughout the whole process of his decline over the last couple of years, he's kept on saying, I need a run without injury. I need to just build. I need to play. I need to. And he's not somebody you can just wheel out onto a tennis court and win a slam out of nowhere. He needs those two or three tournaments before. He needs to get some rhythm. Once he's got them, how on earth do you stop the guy? That's the challenge that all of these people face right now.
Well, he's, of course, in the top half of the draw in Shanghai next week. Federer in the bottom half. Off the top of my head, Thiem is in that bottom half. Goffin is there. Shapovalov has a wild card.
Look at your eyes lighting up.
He's in Dominic Thiem's section, so just wait and watch as Dominic Thiem's hard court best of three set record takes another hit.
He's having a tough time, isn't he?
Oh, goodness me.
I read a stat that he's lost more matches on a hard court than he's won now.
Yeah, losing record over best of three on a hard court. I know, again, it was something I talked about with Naomi Cavaday on air earlier, and she said he's playing the long game and there's a balance between winning and improving, and he's still in the improving phase on hard courts. He's reached the winning phase on clay and he's profiting from that, but he's still in the improving clay phase on hard. I get the logic there, and I, you know, she knows better than me, but I just, I don't have the confidence that she does, that this strategy is necessarily the right one and is going to suddenly pay off big time come 2018. You know, he's not a 19-year-old anymore, and just the way I see him play on hard courts, it just doesn't feel quite right to me. He's not making enough adjustments, and I don't know. I hope she's right. But that's a worrying stat.
Yeah,
I think
it is a worrying stat. Yeah, there's no question about it. Time will tell. I think he's had enough ups this year to give him some hope, but I still don't quite get the way he goes about his business.
So Kyrgios, it certainly looks to us, we could end up looking very silly, but it certainly looks to us like he is perhaps en route to a defeat against Nadal here, barring a sensational comeback. He's still done good this week to his hopes of qualifying for London. Do you consider them outside hopes? Obviously a win today would get him 500 points. He'll get 300 for a final defeat. It's Pablo Carreño Busta in the last qualification spot at the moment. That's who he's chasing. Sasha Zverev, incidentally, of course, qualified for, I mean, it was all but set in stone, but it is absolutely set in stone now. For me, the couple behind him I think are safe as well. I think Thiem, Dimitrov, Cilic should get there. And it's the last couple that are up for grabs. So you've got Carreño Busta. Goffin is there. He was sensational this week. He's won back-to-back titles, 9-match winning streak now. He was so great in the final today, middling the ball, that backhand down the line. It reminded me of, I think it was either during or just on the eve of the Davis Cup final a couple of years ago, Andy Murray talking about the Davy Goffin backhand and just how and why it's so difficult to play against that backhand down the line, and how you sort of know it's coming all the time, but then you also don't ever know when it's coming, and you know how just compact and technically wonderful that shot is. And yeah, he doesn't have the weapons to his game that some others have, but he is in full flight. He's really something to watch, and he was today against Adrian Mannarino, whose hunt for a first ever tour title goes on. He was cutting a sorry figure during the the trophy presentation. They kept on, he was stood there sort of on his own while various different people came and presented him with things and then took them off him. So he sort of always ended up empty-handed. So he had to do a big smile with each item, you know, first of all with his plate, then with a sort of little check. It was about 1/1000th the size of the check that David Goffin was handed. Then he was handed a watch, and then he was finally handed a microphone to give a very solemn thank you speech.
I quite liked the Adrian Mannarino request plea on Twitter, though, for somebody who could find him with the right-sized racket grip. Because he hadn't got one, and he's like playing in the middle of a tournament, and he's asking us, the public.
So yeah, Adrian Mannarino, good run for him to get to the final. 6-love third set over Marin Cilic in the semi-finals. That was a weird one. Cilic couldn't hit a barn door with his serve, but I think Goffin will get there. He's moved just ahead of Karenyi Busta with his win today. Will Kyrgios get there, David?
I don't know. I haven't studied the points closely enough. I think
it's
he's
all
got a
pretty
chance,
tight. Querrey and Anderson are there. Anderson lost second round. Querrey lost first round in Tokyo.
Points,
I mean, look, there are still two Masters 1000s to go. There are a lot of points up for grabs still.
But let's not forget what happened to Kyrgios in Shanghai last year. Now, I'm not suggesting for a second that he's going to tank like he did in that match against Misha Zverev. I do feel, though, that he looks pretty exhausted out here against Nadal. Nadal's grinding him down, and it's set in 3-love now. So, you know, he's just got to be careful, has Nick Kyrgios, just that he has enough left in the tank, is all I would say.
Shanghai this week, what are you most looking forward to re-Shanghai this week? I mean, all eyes on Federer again. How's
I'm
the
looking
back?
Forward to the return of him. I particularly found it amusing watching him dance with, I think it might have been Goofy, on the centre court. If you haven't seen that video, Roger Federer dancing to Disney characters.
Is this a sort of full size? Is this a human man inside the costume?
Yes.
You love those.
Oh,
there's
brilliant.
A collection of photos out there of David Law posing with various different characters.
But I like that about Federer, that he just doesn't care. He's not sort of into this kind of, oh, I'm Roger Federer, I'm not supposed to do this.
I remember
gets involved.
Australian Open 2 years ago, watching, well, 2.5 years ago now on Kids Day. I was sat courtside. Have I told this story on the podcast before? Switch off now, if I've already told this, but I don't think I have.
Promo
I
by
was
Catherine.
Sat,
switch off now.
Courtside. With a cameraman watching Kids Day. And Roger Federer always agrees to participate in Kids Day. It's to his credit, he always does it. And that was the year they had SpongeBob SquarePants and Dora the Explorer, who I think, David, you got photos with both of them.
I stalked them until I did, yeah. my daughter wanted to see
So it. There was Team Dora on one side and Team SpongeBob on the other side. And I think Federer was on Team Dora, off the top of my head. Anyway, I looked over and I happened to notice that the Federer family were sat to my left, and his twin girls. The boys were just babies at the time. They weren't the sort of blazer and waistcoat wearing toddlers that you saw at Wimbledon this year. They were babies, but the girls were, what would they have been, 4 or 5, something like that, perfect Dora the Explorer age. Their excitement at seeing, they were just when he ran out and hugged Dora the Explorer, one of them grabbed the other one and said, "It's Daddy with Dora." And it was the most adorable moment. And he was just lapping it up. He was like the most uncool dad ever. He was like David Law stalking Dora the Explorer. And I'm sure he knew what joy it would be bringing to his kids. And it was just the most wonderful moment. I mean, your dad's Roger Federer. You know, you'd think you'd be pretty nonplussed by anything, but still seeing your dad with Dora the Explorer was the most exciting thing that could possibly have happened to them in their lives.
And I can equate to Federer's feeling of, I don't care if I look a fool. My kids are impressed.
Is that what happens in parenthood?
Yeah, that's right.
Any other business, David? You've popped some pole. David always does the agenda now, so he can sneak some pole vaults on there. And you now don't even tell me what they are.
Yeah, I can't
you
remember
just
what
write
they are.
Pole vault. Well, it says Halep/Sharapova.
Yes.
I don't know what that means.
Well, what I did say, and I know I did one about a week ago. I got some stick for this. It was Halep's birthday. She turned 26, and I immediately said, "Oh, she's turned 26. Will she ever reach number one?" win a Grand Slam, both, or neither.
Well, that's gone out of date quickly.
Well, no, it's just been perfectly timed. Anyway, most people thought she would do both, I have to say. But there were about 29% who thought she would do neither. Well, you're all wrong. I think she will go on to do both now because she's too good not to win a slam for me.
Is it, if we had four women's world number ones this year alone, Pliskova, Muguruza, Halep, Kerber?
I think Serena as well.
So Serena, we've had five.
Yeah. It's happened once before, I've read.
Five in the same year?
I can't remember that.
When was it? Statman Law?
I can't remember, but I read it, that it has happened before. So there we are.
So no any other business? You've got no pole vaults?
Well, the only other pole vault was...
I don't know why I'm inviting.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine. This is good. I think finally you've seen the light. Sharapova, I was asking whether next year people thought she would reach a Grand Slam final. And if she did, would she win it? And actually, 70% thought that she would not reach the Grand Slam final next year.
Interesting. I didn't participate in the poll.
I think she will.
So you think she will reach the final?
The level she's playing at. I think she's playing very well.
I've learned not to underestimate the tenacity of Maria Sharapova. So I think maybe she will. I don't know though. That is it. I think we've officially run out of things to talk about. Unfortunately, Nadal hasn't got the job done while we've been talking, but we can't just keep sitting here chatting amongst ourselves waiting for Nadal to get the job done. So we will leave you with the score at 6-2, 3-love and juice. And if something extraordinary ends up happening, then we'll just have to look really, really silly for once. David Law, thank you for looking silly with me, potentially, on this podcast. We have Bryn, the tennis podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport and with Tamara Glenny and Ella Ehrlich. Thanks both very much to them, and we'll be back next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports-ad-free. That's amazon.com/sports-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.